Michael Cohen. Evidently, Michael Cohen has changed his voter registration. That'll show you, Donald Trump. You know, the guy who said he'd take a bullet for Trump. You know, remember him? He has now changed his voter registration. He's now a Democrat. I'll show you, Republican president. I'll change my vote and I won't be allowed to vote because he's going to be a felon. I don't know why. I guess, you know, hey, it is kind of funny, though. I mean, on a certain level, you gotta think that. Anyway, lots to talk about, especially Michael Cohen and the voter registration. That's why I've asked Matthew Chapman to come talk with us. He's the breaking news reporter for Alternet.com. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be back.
So what do you think? Cohen's now a Democrat. Do you want him back?
I honestly don't even know what to think about that. It's certainly a 180 from him being on Trump's team, being fiercely loyal to him, and you know, he folded fast.
Yeah, well, being his attack dog. I mean, look. I mean, there's a dog that turned around and bit you in the behind.
Well said. So, I mean, I think that Trump's been worried about what Cohen could reveal for a long time. And, you know, he's been cooperating with Mueller's team for a while. Mueller wasn't even the one who prosecuted him. It was referred to the Southern District of New York, but right. He has since started talking to Mueller, too.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, he's trying to save himself. I mean, at the end of the day, when the ship is sinking, the rats will flee.
That is true, and you really need to wonder what exactly he's telling him that is so useful.
Well, I mean, he knows where all the bodies are. I mean, he was the attack dog for all those years. I mean, and it's everything outside, I'm sure, of the Russian investigation. It's all of the criminal stuff that they did when, you know, nobody outside of New York really knew who Trump was, other than maybe you saw a cameo here or there. But, you know, look, I know people in New York say the guy was just mobbed up in every way possible and had his greedy little hands in every basket.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a travesty that when the election was actually taking place, the media didn't look into a lot more seriously things like, you know, who built his tower, you know, the connections that he had, finance, you know, all this stuff could have been looked into much earlier.
I'm right there with you. So here today, the big news, evidently an additional 15 judges have been confirmed to the federal bench. I wanted to get your thoughts on, is this a surrender by Schumer? Do you think they should have put up a better fight? At least, I shouldn't say a better fight, a fight.
I think that there's a good case to be made for that. I mean, I'm honest, obviously, I don't really know a huge amount off the top of my head about these judges. I do know that at least one of them was rated not qualified by the American Bar Association. And what I also know is that it absolutely was not necessary for all Democrats to agree to let them go through. I mean, they are obviously going to go through anyway.
Right.
I think that was Schumer's reasoning. And that this way they get home a little quicker. But, you know, I think that you could certainly have gone about it a different way. You could have had all the senators who were up for re-election go home and start campaigning and leave a skeleton crew there in D.C. to force procedural votes.
Absolutely. I mean,
it wouldn't have made a huge difference, but it at least would have been a nice symbolic gesture.
And what it would have done is, and look, and maybe you'll agree with me or you won't, but, you know, right now the base is fairly rallied, you know, around the Kavanaugh thing. Because, look, Democrats, you know, didn't make themselves look horrible like they normally do. They didn't surrender. You know, they put up something of a fight. And, you know, you take this into the next thing and you grow on that. You expound on that to where people going, hey, maybe this is the new Democratic Party who's actually going to stand with me and fight in a street fight instead of just offer to hold my coat.
That's absolutely true. I think that the Kavanaugh hearings were a model for how Democrats should fight on every one of these judicial appointments. It's important to note that these are all, for the most part, radical, dangerous judges.
Yep.
That they're not just on, you know, the issues that the left typically looks at the court, you know, which is to say, you know, the social issues like gay rights, abortion rights. You also have judges that are going to be very, very hostile to consumer rights, to labor rights, that are going to dramatically expand corporate power, issue more rulings like the ones we saw earlier this year from Janus to Epic Systems. And we need to be. It's really important right now that we start building up an infrastructure to inform voters of the power the courts have,
yep.
what they're doing to rights that are really important to people.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, you know, at the end of this, I tell everybody about the Epic System cases, because look, at the end of the day, when people hear that this court has made the rule of law in this country that if your employer comes to you today and says, sign this or get out the door, sign this, sign your constitutional rights to the judiciary away, sign this forced arbitration clause or you're fired, and that's perfectly okay and legal, people go, what? And you go, this is what the Supreme Court's done.
I know. I mean, this is basically, I mean, this is something that we were supposed to have dealt with decades and decades ago. I mean, this goes all the way back to, you know, into the late 19th, early 20th century when they had yellow dog contracts to make unions outright illegal.
Yep. No, I mean, yellow dog contracts where you signed a piece of paper saying, I will never join a union, and if I do, I'm fired. And they actually held the rule of law until eventually it was overturned. But it took decades for that to happen, and a lot of people suffered under it. I also wanted to get your thought. In addition to these 15 federal judges, the Senate also confirmed this guy, Jeffrey Bozert Clark, to serve as the Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department's Environment and Natural Resources Division. Any thoughts on him?
Oh, that's just going to be such a disaster. And I actually wrote an article tonight detailing exactly the problems with him. So, I mean, obviously the biggest issue is that he was a defense attorney for BP during the Deepwater Horizon issue. And that's just not somebody that you want in charge of enforcing the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act. I mean, this is a person whose job it was to put corporate interests and corporate profits over the public safety.
Yeah, but Matthew, didn't you see all those commercials BP ran about how much they care about the environment? They ran a lot of TV ads about how much they care about fish and wildlife, and they, because they're us too. Don't you remember those?
I do remember those. But in any case, the fact of the matter is that 11 Louisiana parishes BP over the damage they were causing. This guy stepped up to the plate and gave them a legal victory against those parishes and against the people who had to deal with this on the ground.
Yeah, but again, you know, are we surprised that Trump has put this guy forward?
Well, I mean, we're talking about the president who put a coal lobbyist in charge of the EPA after his previous pick resigned for massive ethics scandals.
Yeah, so again, not surprised. Not even a little
not
bit.
Not particularly.
Not even a little bit. Let's switch gears a little bit. Evidently, the Mueller team has issued some questions for the Trump team. Are you surprised that they went to written questions and didn't demand to do an actual interview?
To some degree, I was a bit surprised, and I think it surprised some federal prosecutors as well. Renato Mariotti had a good explanation of it on Twitter that the short answer seems to be that, I mean, nobody really knows what's going on in Mueller's head at this point, what his end game is. But it seems as though he may have decided that whatever he's going to gain from Trump, either good or bad, is probably not going to be greatly enhanced by getting involved in a major court battle with him over whether the president has can be subpoenaed.
Right.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Mueller would win that battle. There's ample precedent on his side, but he might feel that it's just not worth the energy for what he's going
to
get from
it. And to get something down, some statement that you can use to then go back and say, well, wait a second, this, and, you know, force another statement and maybe another statement.
Absolutely, and I think that I mean, in an ordinary situation, as many prosecutors have pointed out, you wouldn't want to do written questions because you really want to gauge the body language of a person. You want to gauge the answers they give on the fly because that's a much more accurate picture of their truthfulness.
Right.
But I think that, at least in this case, that might not be as big of a deal for Mueller because, I mean, you have everything that his administration, the people working for him, say, the next day he goes out and contradicts it in an off-the-cuff speech. So,
or on Twitter.
I think it comes to the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, I think that's because I was thinking the exact same thing. You know, how much of it is the second you put that question in his head, it stews in there until eventually he's got to tweet something out.
Exactly, because you know, I mean, it wouldn't matter as much as it would for another defendant, because this guy just contradicts himself anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good move, because I don't know that Trump would ever voluntarily sit for an interview. If I were advising him, I would say no. You're like John Dowd said, you're going to lose, and unless you like
exactly.
Pinstripes,
you're going to be in an orange jumpsuit.
Exactly. You know, stay away from that. You're going to lose. But, you know, to get him on the record, I think, is extremely important. And we'll see where this takes us. I remember when Rudy floated it, I was going, I don't know. I kind of want to see the deposition. I think we should put it on pay-per-view. I think we could solve some of our debt problems a little bit with that. I think it would blow all other pay-per-views away. But it would be fun.
It would certainly be, and you know, we goodness knows that our country is short on laughs lately.
No, I'm with you. I think we need it. I think it would be something that might pull us together. You know, watching him like when Bill Clinton was under, you know, just watching him sweat under the lights, I think would be something worth doing. Let me ask you this: November 6th, right around the corner, there's a bunch of very interesting candidates out on the trail, and I wanted to get your thoughts on just a couple of them. There's a guy in Virginia's 5th Congressional District, this guy Denver Riggleman. Evidently, he has an idea on how we can help women on college campuses.
Well, you know, Rick, that matters to me very personally, because my parents actually happen to live in that district.
Really?
Yeah, and they've been on the ground fighting him for a while, actually. They're pretty terrified of him. I mean, they really hated the guy before him, Tom Garrett, who recently resigned after a scandal broke about his use of his congressional staffers as personal servants, and also, you know, his struggles with drinking. So in any case, Riggleman basically went on stage and said that the real solution for sexual assault on college educate females. Those were his exact words. And he only put it in as an afterthought at the end that we should have a conversation with young men.
And how would he educate females? I'm kind of curious on what the thought process there was.
Well, from what, I mean, he wasn't that specific in his answer, but from what it sounded like what he wanted to do was, his idea of educating females is putting them in touch with support groups that explain to them the importance of reporting immediately. And, I mean, while it is good to report a sexual assault immediately, obviously,
right,
there are many survivors who are just not in an emotional state to do that. In many cases, putting somebody on the stand can be more traumatic than the assault itself. So this is a personal decision that a lot of them have to make, and that's one of the big reasons why it's such an underreported crime. I think that I personally think that a really important step we need to take as a society is to reduce the social cost and the skepticism towards women who report. I mean, believe women isn't just a chant. It's something that we actually have to do. I mean, think about any other crime. If you get mugged and you go up to the police and you say you were mugged, none of them ever ask you, are you sure? Like, are you sure you're not just embarrassed about how much money you gave him so you cried mugging? So, I mean, we need to approach assault allegations with a lot less skepticism. We need to treat them the way we would treat any other crime and believe it.
But Matthew, we're assaulting men.
You know, I would say that as long as a man is respectful to women, they shouldn't have a problem. I mean, look at it this way. You're more likely to run into a man who has been raped than a man who has been falsely accused of rape.
Okay. I hope he hasn't been raped. My wife was telling me that, in talking about consent, a good way to explain consent to a man is, I forget how it was, how a gay man touches a straight man. That's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I've heard that too. How men understand consent immediately when they're around a gay man.
Exactly. There you go. There it was. There's what it was. That's actually a pretty good way of explaining it. Let's move on. Another candidate I wanted to get to, Arizona's 9th congressional district. This guy named Steve Ferrara. Evidently, those poor people are just like dogs.
Yeah. According to him, basically welfare programs essentially turn people into starving pets who need food from their owners.
And, as I was reading his statement, he said, if we love our pets, but they can't feed themselves. So if you don't put food down, you don't put a roof over their head, they're going to starve. And I thought, no, they probably won't starve. They'll probably take a chunk out of your behind.
I mean, the thing that bothers me about this whole thing, and this has been the Republican mantra for ages, that social programs are just a way of trapping people by depriving them of their work ethic. That's undercut by the fact that the vast majority of people on social programs actually already work.
Right.
Problem is that wages are so low that they can't afford a roof over their head.
No, I'm right there with you. And look, I'm in favor of certain bits of support. I personally am against handout programs. I think we should have jobs programs. I think the government should be the employer of last resort. If the private sector can't or won't create enough good-paying jobs, I think we as a society should be creating living wage jobs for people to be able to support themselves. But you'll never hear that from a Republican. No, no! It's the invisible hand will take care of everything. And that's just total nonsense.
Right, no. I mean, they want to have it both ways. Like, I personally think a jobs guarantee program is a terrific idea. They work very well in the New Deal.
Yeah, no, I think because it does give people the dignity and respect of work, because I actually do believe that there is a therapeutic quality to work. There is something that, knowing at the end of the day that you did an honest day's work and you made your way, I think there's something very positive to that. And this is where I'll agree with Republicans. I believe that the best anti-poverty program is a job, but it's got to be a good job with living wages and reasonable benefits that you can retire on and don't have to worry about going broke if you get sick. Finally, a Republican Senate candidate there in Missouri evidently canceled his event with his Nazi pastor. What's with that?
Well, so Josh Hawley was in Missouri. He was running against Claire McCaskill. He was planning to have an event with a pastor from Texas who is called gay people evil and compared them to Nazi Germany. He has since canceled this, and he claims that he didn't actually do it because of the pastor, that it was just a scheduling conflict. Although, when reporters actually confronted him about the things the pastor said, he tried to distance himself from it. I will say that this pastor has actually been a large part of his campaigning in the past, though. He campaigned for him when he was running for Missouri Attorney General. He appeared with him at the Pastors and Pews event in December 2017 when Hawley first claimed that the sexual revolution was responsible for human trafficking. So it's clear that this guy's hiding some very retrogressive views that he's now trying to push aside since he's won the primary.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it all plays out. Matthew, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, man.
Thank you so much.
As always, our good friend Matthew Chapman. You can check out his work over at alternet.com. Really good stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.